All right, everybody, welcome back to the Fantasy Hockey Hacks podcast. I'm Devin Davidson, your host. With me, as always, my co-hosts, Bruce Gunther and John Enns. Boys, how you doing?
Good. A little sunburn, but other than that, not bad.
Yeah, holy hell, it was hot this week.
I'm doing mighty fine. I try to stay indoors all the time, so I think I'm doing all right.
We were driving down to Swift Current on, was that Friday? Or, well, I guess Beaver Flats, so close to Swift Current, but it was 40 degrees Celsius on the highway. So we had lots of water, fingers crossed that nothing broke down because it was hot.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah. I, sat in my swimming pool and went half lobster. I didn't go full lobster, but half lobster.
Yeah. That picture you sent me was pretty good. Just living it up poolside.
You bet.
Oh, man. All right. So this week, we're doing our second Seattle expansion draft take. This week, following up on the Honda West division. Of course, we're always going to follow up on the news like we always do. I don't know if I mentioned you guys. I just kind of made the decision. We're going to skip over DFS picks this week because we've kind of beaten that horse to death. There's not really much more we can do with one series unless you want to hear us guys talk about how good Andre Vasilevsky is again, but probably not. So
yeah, it's been like 3 weeks in a row. We could probably let it go.
Yeah, we're gonna let that one go now. So with that, let's get to the hockey news. So June 30th, Jonathan Toews finally spoke publicly about his absence from the Chicago Blackhawks. I guess he was diagnosed with chronic immune response syndrome. I think I have that right. Anyway, he doesn't really know what it is. The doctors don't really know what it is. It sounds like he was just stressed and his immune system was constantly fighting something. They don't know what. He hopes to be ready for the start of next season, though, so that is some good news for the Chicago Blackhawks. I'm sure a welcome bit of news given what's going on that team with the sexual assault allegations and all sorts of things. So a bit of good news for that team. Good to see. What do you guys think? I mean, obviously he's a big part of that team and I'm sure they'd like to have him back.
Yeah. It'd be nice to see him back on the ice too. Right. So when you say chronic immune response syndrome, it doesn't sound very good. So if he can come through that and back on the ice, that's a big thing, I think.
Yeah. Did you guys see the video? I put it in the show notes here, so you'll see it eventually, but, they interviewed him. It was a 2-minute clip. He kind of sounded rough. Like he sounded to me like he'd been worn down, like he'd just been sick for a long time. He's kind of hoarse and just seemed low energy. I don't know. Did you guys see that video?
No, I didn't watch it.
No, I haven't watched it yet either. I'll take a look at that after. But
yeah, give it a look.
I just wanted to say that those kind of injuries scare me a little bit. Just because there's no real way to treat them, so to say. Like, you can't put a timetable really on anything, and you just never know what's going to happen with those. All I think about is, like Nolan Patrick's injuries that he's had the last few years, his constant migraines or everything else, that's kept him out for a good part of 2-3 years, ever since the draft. So
those are tough, right? And for me, have any of us touched Nolan Patrick in fantasy drafts the last couple of seasons? I know I haven't.
No, I haven't either.
Nope.
So what are your thoughts on Jonathan Toews? Like, are you guys going to reach for him at any point in the draft next year? Or are you just kind of,
if he's there in the late rounds, I will. I won't pick him as a high one, but if he's there in the later rounds, I will for sure. Is it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with Bruce. I won't talk to him first thing or even mid tier. I wouldn't grab him, but late round. Yeah. I think I'd take a chance there just in case he does come back, and who knows, he has
he's
the ability to play well.
He's also one of those players that won't play unless he is 100% either. So, but too, he's got to feel it out too. So
I'll see how it goes next year. I won't hesitate to grab him. But of course, yeah, it just depends on where, and it'll be mid to late rounds for me too. I think that makes a lot of sense. So kind of on that topic of discussion, there was a trade rumor or a trade announced this week. So July 1st, Victor Arvidsson was dealt to the Los Angeles Kings for a 2021 second round pick and a 2022 third round pick. He's a guy that I don't know if he went late in the draft last year. Like, he was another of those guys. He had a down year last year, a down year the year before. But he has some upside, right? His best season to date was in 2018-19. He had 48 points, 34 goals in 58 games played. So he was on pace for 68 points in an 82-game season. He finds a new home in LA, and I think there's some potential there. Daily Faceoff had him slotted next to Gabe Vilardi and Andreas Athanasiou on the second line, but I see him as a really nice fit on the first line with Kopitar. What do you guys think of Arvidsson in that trade?
He definitely gives LA more dynamic, right? I think you'll probably see him more on the second line than you will on the first line. I think that's why they brought him in, more for depth scoring, because that's, well, LA didn't really have much scoring, period, right? So it's, but I think he'll be more of a depth. I think you'll see him more on the second line, just to try and bring some more balance and give them more of an offensive push rather than just pushing one line, which is basically all they were last year.
Well, and I think it could be a good fit too. Like, I like Gabe Vilardi. There's potential there, and I think Athanasiou at times can be a dangerous player. So those three together might make for a nice fit on that second line. But I just think Kopitar is a great setup guy, right? He's a great passer. Arvidsson can put the puck in the net when he's got a shot, right? So it could be a good fit there too. But he might move up and down lineup, right? He might end up on the third line. Who knows?
Yeah, exactly.
So sorry, go ahead, Bruce.
So they got Byfield that's coming up too. So
that's right.
They'll find a spot for him too. So
yeah, there was some talk that LA was going to potentially be in the Jack Eichel trade talks, and I'm curious if that happens still at some point. You know, if he's your first or second line center next season too, like that, LA might turn around quickly, like New York did, right? Possibly.
They could, but I don't think they will. I don't think they're ready yet to do that, to go quite there yet.
They're still missing some pieces, right? Like, they don't have Shesterkin like the Rangers have. They don't have some of those other pieces. They don't have an Adam Fox. Like, they've got Doughty, but obviously he's kind of towards the back nine of his career. So he would definitely be slower moving, but I like some of the pieces they have in LA.
No, it's nice.
All right. July 2nd. Joel Eriksson Ek signed an 8-year contract extension worth $42 million. That's a $5.25 million AAV. It was the first 8-year max deal in franchise history. Came with a 10-team no-trade clause taking effect in year 4. The Wild centerman had 30 points, 19 goals, and 56 games this past season. That was a 44-point pace over 82 games. That was Ek's fifth and most productive season to date. I think he looked really good. Bruce, you had followed the Wild fairly closely this year. I think he's coming into his own. He's a player that the Oilers were interested in the draft. But he looked good, especially, I think, in the playoffs, right? He showed some potential there. So it should be interesting to see what he does next year.
No, he sure did. Yeah, no, he sure did. It's coming together nicely. So, and it's good price points. Max length deal, can't argue with that.
You know what, this deal honestly made me feel better about the Nugent Hopkins. Like, I already felt pretty good about RNH's new contract extension, but when I saw Eriksson Ek at 5.25, based on offensive output, and I think Nuge might even be a little bit better on the faceoff. Like, I really feel pretty good about it, even though Nuge is an older player. I like the value in the Nuge contract more.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I don't know. John, what do you think?
I agree with that one too. Don't get me wrong, Eriksson Ek's a fantastic player. Money-wise, I say it's right. But yeah, I just see Nuge as a more complete player than Eriksson Ek. So, of course, I'm always on the Nuge bandwagon. But no, I like that deal for Minnesota there. Eriksson Ek's a solid player. And at that price point, and to lock him up for 8 years, I just think these guys are going to start going up in value, and to get him locked in for 8 years is good.
Yeah, well, to see him playing next to some guys like Kirill Kaprizov or Matt Zuccarello. I think he spent some time with Jordan Greenway and Marcus Foligno too, which was a productive line. Mm-hmm. That's good for them. I mean, Minnesota is definitely more exciting to watch than they used to be, that's for sure. So, listeners, if you agree with our take on that contract versus Nugent Hopkins, let us know. Feel free to add us at Fantasy Hockey Hacks. A bit more news here from this week. So July 2nd, We talked about this before coming on air here, John. The Oilers are reportedly the front runners for Duncan Keith. What do you guys think about this? This is kind of, to me, this came out of left field. I have mixed feelings on it. Bruce, you go ahead. Like, what do you think?
I think for Chicago, I think this is almost like a salary dump, right? So that's kind of what I see it as. So if he's making way for the Oilers, I would hope that there's something along that helps the impact of this, right? So I guess he would be a good mid-pairing defenseman, right? So I guess someone that could replace Oscar Klefbom, although his cap hit's slightly higher than Oscar's. But I don't know if I would give up that much for him. So it'll be interesting to see what goes back. So the rumor is it's Caleb Jones, which was my pick in the Seattle draft. So I guess if you'd rather trade him away for Duncan Keith, I'd rather see that than to lose Jones in the draft for nothing. So,
okay, fair enough. So we talked earlier too, and I said, well, in that same vein, why wouldn't, if you're the Oilers, why wouldn't you go after Seth Jones yourself? Because the article I read was Chicago is trying to acquire Caleb Jones because they want to go after Seth Jones and they feel that could help their case. Chicago apparently is one of the teams that Seth Jones would like to go to. I just don't know why. Like, I think the Oilers could make room for him in the cap, right? Like we said, yeah, Nurse is due for a raise, but it's going to be maybe $2.5 million increase to get him up to $8 million. Oscar Klefbom almost certainly is going to be on LTIR. You know, that's $4.25 million. I think you could make it work. Why can't you do some cap gymnastics and try to bring in Seth Jones? Or do you even like Seth Jones? I don't know. But John, what do you think?
I like Seth Jones a lot more than I like Duncan Keith.
No question.
I hate to say it. I've never really been a Duncan Keith guy. He's never been one of my top defensemen. I don't know why. It's probably just the hair. I have this.
I think it's the hair. That's it, John. Yeah, you just don't like the hair.
Nope. But yeah, no, I wouldn't be willing to give up anything good for him. As for something like Strom coming back, that would really excite me. I really like Dylan Strome as a player. He lit it up in junior. Well,
the Erie Otters connection, right? Him and McDavid.
Exactly. No, I really like him as a player. And last couple years, he's really stepped it up. He looked like kind of a bust at the start there, but he's really picked his game up. And that I like a lot more than just the Duncan Keith salary dump kind of deal.
Well, and Dylan Strome, so I'm just on cap friendly right now. He's only at $3 million. He's an RFA in 2022.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you can make something work there to bring him back, I think that'd be a really good deal for the Oilers. I don't know. I like some of the things that Duncan Keith does. Like he's still in phenomenal shape, right? He's always had incredible VO2 results. His cardio is off the charts. He's won 3 Stanley Cups and 2 gold medals. And like he is a proven winner everywhere he's gone. And the only real benefit I can see of bringing him in at this point, especially at that cap hit, is to be a mentor to your young D that you've got coming along. But at what price point?
Yeah. Cause he's going to be 38 in a week or two. So yeah. I don't know. Just to me, once you get up in that age group, I'm not a fan. Like you said, with the Seth Jones thing, that would make me a lot more happy.
Well, so would you make that deal then if Chicago retains some salary, which it doesn't sound like they're going to, but if they did and you got Strome back in the deal, would you give up Caleb Jones to make that work?
Yes.
Bruce, what do you think?
I think so. I'd be comfortable with doing that.
Like you and I had talked last week about when it first came out, these rumors, you said, well, would you do it? And I said, well, if we can send him James Neal, sure. Like that's kind of a no-brainer to me, but you know, I don't know if that's, it sounds like they don't want Neal or Koskinen or any of those other garbage contracts. Right. So,
yeah. Well, if they're going after Seth Jones, that would make a ton of sense, right? They don't want to take any salary back because they want to allocate it to him. Right. So,
yeah. Well, and all this stuff has to happen fairly quick, right? Because I think, is it July 13th, the last day that teams can ask players to waive their no trades or their no move clauses?
Yeah.
And then I think the lists have to
Keith has a full no movement clause, so they have to they would have to protect them.
Yeah, so this all has to come down before July 13th, basically. So we're, you know, a week and change away. So the next little while here should be pretty interesting. Before we get too far down that path, let's move along here. Let's talk about the Cup Final a bit here, because a lot has happened since the last week here. I'm not going to, you know, recap each game, but obviously Tampa's up 3-0. They've got a commanding lead.
I was going to say, Bruce, are you still picking Montreal in 7?
Absolutely.
You know what? The payout on that would be huge. I think it was like plus 2,000 or plus. It was a stupid number. Like if you took the Habs in 7, it was a pretty good payout. It's probably even higher now.
There's only been one team that's actually ever come back from a 3-0 deficit in the Stanley Cup final to win, and that was a Leafs team from the 40s, I think it was. So
1942. Yep. They beat the.
I realize the chance is slim.
Look, it could happen.
Why not? I've been Montreal all the way through. It could happen.
The Leafs beat the Red Wings in 1942. I mean, it happened one time. It could happen again. However unlikely. I mean, it might be worth looking at to go check the odds. Go check out Action Network or even Daily Faceoff's got those odds listed, I think. But if you were to put $100 on that game, just to say like Habs in 7. The payout would be pretty substantial, so just be prepared to lose $100. But so goaltending, Carey Price, he's got an .835 save percentage in this series, a 4.39 goals against average, and a -5.73 goals saved above average. So he has been not good. It's not all on Carey; like this is a team thing. Tampa, the Bolts have outscored the Habs in the series 14-5 through the first three games, so it's pretty much been complete dominance. Vasilevskiy, on the other hand, has got a .948 save percentage, a 1.67 goals against average, and a 3.92 goals saved above average. So he's been very, very good. The Lightning have been very good. I would not be surprised to see this series done tomorrow night in Montreal, which is unfortunate.
I hope not,
John.
I hope not as well. See. I want my game 5 prediction to go.
Well, you hate to see a sweep in the Cup final, right? That's just terrible for everyone. But
yeah,
I'm not convinced it goes 5 games at this point. And I don't even know what I think I said Tampa in 6, but this is getting silly, honestly.
Yeah, the big thing is Vasilevskiy, right? He's made saves, and some of the goals that Tampa Bay have scored on Price too, it's like, were just ridiculous goals. Like how they were able to pull that off was just amazing on some of those.
No, they're an incredible team. They deserve to be where they are. Pat Maroon is going to go for his third straight Stanley Cup, which is kind of crazy.
So whoever he signs next season is going to the Stanley Cup final, apparently.
Yeah, there was a joke on Twitter. I don't know if you saw it or not, but it was like, if you want to win the draft lottery, you sign Taylor Hall. If you want to win the Stanley Cup, you sign Pat Maroon.
I still wouldn't sign him.
Pat Maroon or Taylor Hall?
Pat Maroon. I'd sign Hall.
Yeah, we can hope. We can keep our fingers crossed, but I don't think he's coming back.
We can sign him. We can put him back on Connor's wing. He can score 30 more goals.
Yeah, I'd have no problem bringing him back to play with Connor. All right. Well, that's that. We'll see what happens tomorrow night. I guess the other thing I was going to mention too, it sounds like they're not upping the number of fans in the Bell Center.
They're going to be 3,500?
Yeah. Which is too bad, right? Like, I just thought they would have adjusted that for the Cup Final, but.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 3,500 in the stadium, 35,000 outside the stadium. So it's like.
Yeah. That doesn't matter. Yeah. No, COVID rules. Sorry. Yeah. Can't do it.
That's another reason for me not to want the Cup to be decided tomorrow. I'd rather have it go to a place that's going to be packed.
Actually, yes, I agree. I almost want Tampa just to throw the game tomorrow so they can go back to Tampa and have the building packed.
Well,
And
that was another thing that was going around too. Does Tampa give Montreal this game so they can win it at home? Like, do you have enough confidence in your team that you'd be willing to quote unquote, throw a game so that you can win it at home?
Do you take that chance? They would never 100%. Openly admit it. They would never openly admit it, but I feel like they're confident enough that they could say, yeah, let's just throw a game and we'll take it in Tampa. Like I could see it. It wouldn't shock me.
Because they've had, anytime that Montreal has done something, they've had the answer for it, right? So anytime Montreal has made a mistake, that puck's been in the back of the net, right? And there's a few of those that Carey yeah. Price would definitely like back. There was a couple that squeaked through him that he would have definitely liked to have back. But it just seems that no matter what Montreal did, they make a mistake in their own zone, and all of a sudden, boom, it's in the back of their net. Like it's
well, and the Habs have been riding their success on, yeah. on the back of Carey Price. Like they, if without Carey Price this entire playoff run, they wouldn't be where they are, right? That's and now he's kind of looked human through three games, and that's why they're down 3-0. So, yeah, should be interesting to see what happens. Let's move on to the actual expansion draft. So this week we're doing the Honda West Division. I'm not going to go through all the rules again. If you missed it from last week, go ahead and listen to episode 13. We kind of go through some of the rules and requirements of the expansion draft if you're not familiar with them. They're also in the show notes as well on the episode page at fantasyhockeyhacks.com. So take a look there if you need some information on how the selection goes. There's also some expansion draft tools that we've utilized. So capfriendly.com and puckpedia.com both have great expansion draft tools you can utilize yourself if you want to go and play around with that. And so with that, we're going to get into it. The first team here is the Anaheim Ducks. So I've got them going 4-4-1. Bruce, John, what did you guys go? Same thing?
I went 7-3-1.
Okay.
I went 4-4-1.
Okay. So I think we're all different here, right? So I went Adam Henrique. Like I thought they're going to protect Silverberg, Raquel, Troy Terry, Isaac Lundstrom. I think I'm missing a couple players here. Sorry, guys. Defenseman had Cam Fowler, Hampus Lindholm, and Josh Manson, and then John Gibson in goal. So and at the end of the day, the pick I had here was for Adam Henrique. I just think he's a veteran center. He's got some leadership qualities. He's good in the faceoff dot at 55.4%. He can play on the PK, and his cap hit is going to help Seattle get to the cap floor too. So I think he's got some good qualities. He's got some game left, 3 years remaining on his contract. So the term isn't awful. And he had 11 points in his final 20 games of the regular season. So I thought that he's got some good production there in the back half of the season, and maybe in a new environment with some added responsibility, he could do okay as well. But that's my pick. Guys, Bruce, what did you think here for Anaheim?
So for me, I went 7-3-1. Do you want me to rattle off who I protected and who I didn't? Or
If it was different than mine, yeah, you go ahead.
Differences was, in terms of protection, I had Silverberg, Raquel. So I added Sam Steele, Max Jones, and Isaac Lundstrom. And then the one I didn't protect was Hayden Fleury, which is my pick for Seattle was Hayden Fleury.
Okay. Good young defenseman with some pedigree, right?
Yeah, they traded. So they got him in a trade from
Carolina. Yeah.
But I just think they're willing to protect their – I just thought they'd be willing to protect their young forwards more. And I think after Henrique showing at the end of the season and is showing in the World Championships that they would probably decide to keep him as opposed to trying to trade him or to let him go in the draft.
Yeah, right. And that's why I went 4-4-1 because I liked Fowler, Lindholm, Manson, and Fleury. I think Hayden Fleury is a young guy they want to try and hold on to if they can. But, we'll see what happens there. John, what did you do for your picks there?
For mine, I went 4-4-1. For my protected forwards, I picked Raquel Lundstrom, Max Jones, and Troy Terry. For defensemen, Fowler, Lindholm, Manson, and Fleury. Goalie, obviously, John Gibson. For my Seattle pick, I picked Sam Steele. I just think he's a young guy. He's got some good upside to him. And also the reason I went 4-4-1 is just because I do think that Anaheim values Hayden Fleury quite a bit, and I think they really want to hold on to him. So yep. So I think we had to give up on some forwards there, and I just think that Seattle will go after Sam Steele.
Yeah, they've got lots of guys at four that they're maybe not thrilled with, right? Like, so yeah, Sam Steele's one of them. That's one of those guys that hasn't really taken off maybe the way they hoped, but
yeah,
there's still upside there, right?
Yeah, for sure. I was reading that they were not happy with his development. They thought he'd be a lot further along than he is. But I think a change in scenery could do him pretty well.
Agreed. Okay. All right, let's move on to the Arizona Coyotes. I went 7-3-1, so Clayton Keller, Phil Kessel, Nick Schmaltz, Christian Dvorak, Lawson Kraus, Christian Fisher, and Connor Garland for forwards. On defense, I've got OEL, although, as we said last week, he's in lots of trade rumors, and he may get moved before the deadline for the expansion draft, but we'll see. So as of now, though, I've got him protected along with Jacob Chychrun and Nicholas Jarmolson. In goal, I've got Darcy Kemper. And then for Seattle's pick, I said Aiden Hill or potentially Michael Bunting. But I just think Hill, he's 25. He's 6'6". He's on a cheap contract. He's got a career 909 save percentage with the Coyotes. I know they've been an okay defensive team, but in general, they're not a very good club. And in his last 14 games played last year, he sported a 915 save percentage, a 273 goals against average, and a 2.70 goals saved above average. So at worst, Aiden Hill would be a serviceable backup with potential to be a starter if somebody went down with injury, or just with a better team in front of him, he may potentially do a bit better. But he's a big goaltender, right? And usually that's something the guys look for in their goaltenders is size. Michael Bunting, he kind of had some offensive flashes last year. He had 13 points in 21 games down the stretch. Ron Francis just needs to decide what he's looking for, right? And if that offensive outburst from Bunting was a flash in the pan or legitimate. So one thing I noticed, he had a 26% shooting percentage, Michael Bunting did. So how much of that is inflated production? How much of it is real? Hard to say. But Bruce, what was your take on Anaheim, or sorry, on Arizona?
Actually, much the same. So I had a couple of slightly different players protected than what you did. But in the end, the choice for Seattle was the same. Well, I picked Aiden Hill because, again, so look, how many times has Kemper and Ranta been hurt, right? And he's come in and he's done a good job for him, right, coming in. He's usually been the third guy in the press box or down in the AHL, and they got to call him up. So he's always coming in and not being completely prepared. So he's just kind of thrown in once they get hurt, and he's done a great job. So I think in Seattle, he's got a chance to compete to be a starting goaltender there, I think.
Yeah, I think he could do well in Seattle. John, what'd you think?
With my picks, I went 7-3-1. Basically same picks as you, just for a couple differences there. I had Tyler Pitlick in there instead of Christian Fisher, and then I also had for defenseman Kyle Capobianco in there. But in the end, my Seattle pick still Aiden Hill. We're all kind of beating the same drum there. It's kind of like they always say, you can't teach size with goaltending. So,
yeah.
No, it's definitely a win there for a guy that size.
I think so. And should come in on a fairly reasonable contract too, right? I don't know. Let's go take a look here. So he was at $800,000. He's an RFA this year, actually. So they'll have a chance to negotiate with him in that negotiation window. Is it between the 17th and the 21st? Somewhere in that range, right, guys? It's
yeah.
But either way, I mean, he's not going to come in on a big contract.
Yeah, it's not going up by a lot.
No. No, he's a guy. I took a flyer on him just as a spot starter last year, right? Bruce, I think you might have too, once or twice in our ESPN league.
Yeah, I think I grabbed him a few times as a spot starter.
And they were pushing down the stretch for the playoffs, so usually it was a good spot start. But okay, looks good there. Let's go to the Colorado Avalanche. This is an interesting one. They've got lots of decisions to make there in the offseason. For me, I went 7-3-1. So Nathan McKinnon, Mikko Rantanen, Gabriel Landeskog. I do expect he's going to get signed before the expansion draft. I don't see them not protecting him or not signing him, right? That would shock me. I've got them protecting Nazem Kadri, Andrei Burakovsky, Valeri Nichushkin, and Tyson Jost. On defense, Cale Makar, who's an RFA, I expect they're going to get him signed as well. Samuel Girard and Devin Toews. And in goal, I'm back and forth on this one, but I do think they'll protect Philip Grubauer. I'm not totally convinced they sign him, but then you got to replace him if you don't sign him and protect him. So I don't think their second round exit was his fault last year, right? Like, I think for the most of the year, he was good. He was a Vezina Trophy finalist. Yeah. So at the end of the day though, my pick was Ryan Graves. We can discuss him after, but Bruce, what was your thoughts on Colorado?
I had a real tough time with this one, going through and looking at, like, at 7-3-1 or 4-4. It's like, so my pick ended up being the same as yours, Ryan Graves, but I went through two or three different iterations of this. At one time, I had one of Colorado's forwards going, and then it's like, well, in the end, I went with Graves as a pick. So, because I think they're definitely going to get Makar signed, but I think after what Vegas did to them in the playoffs, I think they may want to retool some of their defense.
Yeah, could be.
And they've got a good mobile defense. The problem is when they had to defend, it wasn't, other than Makar, they had trouble defending. So,
yeah. John, what do you think?
I agree. I had the troubles with defense there. But as for my protected list and my picks, it's the same as Devin's there. Every player the same there. McKinnon, Rantanen, Landeskog, Kadri, Burakovsky, Nichushkin, and Tyson Jost there. And yeah, I said Ryan Graves as well. Like I say, he's a big dude.
6'5", 220.
Yeah, he's a solid player, and he's not very old either. So I always lean towards the young guys there. That's just the way I am.
Yeah, I don't disagree. If you can get some younger players with youth and energy, and even just for durability's sake, right? And sometimes cheaper.
Yep.
His Corsi and expected goals metrics were good with Colorado last year, and I didn't know this, but he was actually the plus minus leader in the NHL in 2019-2020.
Ooh.
So, not that everyone loves plus minus, but I mean, that tells you something. If he was the top guy in the NHL, I mean, he was doing something right on the ice.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, no, I like Ryan Graves for Seattle. I think that would be a great pickup for them. Bolsters their top four on defense and gives them some size, right? With that, let's move on to the LA Kings. So again, I went 7-3-1 here. Anze Kopitar, Andreas Anthedesiou, Elias Anderson, Carl Grundstrom, Alex Iafallo, Adrian Kempe, and Trevor Moore were my picks at forward. On defense, I went Drew Doughty, obviously, Matt Roy, and Sean Walker. And then in goal, I protected Cal Peterson, just based on age. And I think performance-wise last year, they were very, very similar. Quick is kind of past his prime, obviously, and he's a bit more expensive, so that was sort of an easy pick for me. At the end of the day, the pick for Seattle for me is Cale Clegg. He's a smart mobile defenseman. He's shown flashes of offensive ability, particularly in junior. According to Dauber Prospects, his PNHLE projects him to be a second pairing defenseman. He was drafted in the second round overall in 2016. So that's my take on the Kings. Bruce, what did you think?
I had a tough time figuring out who to protect on this team. So I went 7-3-1 too. Actually, I think we had basically the same. I did some research going through The Athletic, their mock draft, and just did some checking on their like their prospects in general, and I kind of came up with the same pick. So with Cale Clegg as well.
The Kings are the hardest for me in the whole division, honestly, because they don't have a lot
in the division. Yeah,
in that division, no. They just don't have a lot. So, who do you protect and who do you expose? John, what do you think?
I went a little different than you guys. I went with a 4-4-1.
I love it.
But like you say, they don't have a whole lot to pick from. It's unfortunate, but that's what made it difficult. I was kind of running out of guys I wanted to protect.
Protect.
Yep. But I ended up protecting Anze Kopitar, Alex Iafallo, Adrian Kempe, and Andreas Athanasiou. And for defensemen, Drew Doughty, Sean Walker, Matt Roy, and I went with Cale Clegg as well. Goalie, Cal Peterson, like you say, he's younger. He's a lot less expensive. I don't think that Seattle would be interested in going for a quick anyways. So I think they're fairly safe with doing that. But I, for my Seattle pick, went with Carl Granström. Reason being, I think, LA has a lot more. I think they're holding Cale Clegg to a higher standard. I think they really want to keep him. Like you say, in junior, he is a real big talent, and I think they just feel that they need to unlock that. And so I just went off the board there and went with Carl Granström.
I don't disagree with that, actually, John. Like, the more I did some research on Cale Clegg, the more I kind of went, I like this kid. Like, he might have some potential, and he might not be any more than a second pairing two-way defenseman, and he might not be prolific at scoring, but he might be a kid you want to keep around. So I could see a situation, sure, where they went 4-4-1 and held on to him.
Yeah, and that's one area where I have issues is I'm a big junior guy, so I guess we all knew that before anyways, but I'm high on junior players and what they bring to the table in junior. I always hope that transitions over to the NHL. Obviously doesn't always happen, but I always like to hold those who do good in higher regard. And I think he's one guy who could unlock his potential there.
Yeah, he's got some pedigree, right? I think he did play for Canada at the under 20s at one point in time, and he's been a pretty good offensive defenseman during junior. So be interesting to see what happens with him. So with that, let's go to the Minnesota Wild. Again, I went 7-3-1. That was a pretty consistent theme for me throughout this whole thing. But Kevin Fiala, Matt Zuccarello, Joel Eriksson-Ek, who again, we just said they signed, Marcus Foligno, Jordan Greenway, Ryan Hartman. And I've got Zach Parise here. Yeah, he's got a no movement clause. Whether or not he's going to waive that, I seriously doubt it. You know, he signed a big contract to be there for a long time. I'd be surprised if he wasn't protected. Defenseman Ryan Suter, again, he's got a no-movement clause. Jared Spurgeon and Jonas Brodin. Goalie protected, Kaapo Kähkönen. And then, so that leaves Matt Dumba as my pick for Seattle. And I think, not to burst any bubbles here, but I think we all went with Matt Dumba, right, as our picks?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, so you guys tell me, what are your thoughts on Matt Dumba?
Oh, I love him. I think he's a fantastic player. I know, was it 2 years ago in our fantasy league there where we were kind of bickering back and forth if we wanted to trade him to each other or not, and
you wouldn't do it.
We were pretty high on it. No, I just think he's a solid guy, solid player.
Well, and wasn't that the year, like, that was in 17-18, I think, when he had his big breakout year?
Yeah,
When I was heckling you for him, you wouldn't trade him to me, and
I
was throwing a bunch of players at you too. Like, I was definitely going to lose the trade, but I just needed a defenseman, and you wouldn't do it. And he had 14 goals and 50 points in that season, which was just awesome. And then he came back the next year, and he started off even better. Like, he was at 0.69 points per game, projected for 56 points. And then he had that pectoral tear, right? So I don't think he's quite been the same since. He did get better again, I think, towards the end of this past season, right? Like that was good to see. But yeah, I think he'd be a great fit in Seattle. I think it's kind of a no brainer for them.
Well, this is one of the teams that we'll see too that could very much make a deal with Seattle, so they don't take Dumba, that they actually take somebody else. But we'll see what happens, right?
Yeah, it could, right? That, well, they very well could want to hold on to him and make some sort of side deal. But as Vegas showed us, they might end up paying through the nose to protect a guy like Matt Dumba. And at the end of the day,
they got burned last time, right?
Yeah. So do you want to get burned again? Like, I don't know. You might be better just to give him up and move on, unfortunately.
Well, and if they lose Dumba, they could give his cap hit to Kaprizov. So.
Yeah, man, they got to get him signed, honestly.
Sounded like they were just starting talks again here this week.
Good. Okay, so I guess we'll just move on from Minnesota then, guys. Is there anything else here you want to touch on?
No,
I don't think so. Like I said, with my picks, I went 7-3-1. And Matt Dumba is just the odd guy out there, as far as I can tell.
Yep. Okay, so that leads us to the San Jose Sharks. Some difference here of opinion. I went 7-3-1. I went Logan Couture, Evander Kane, Timo Meier, Thomas Hertl, Kevin LeBanc, Ryan Donato, and Rudolph Balcers. Defenseman protected Erik Karlsson, Mark-Edward Vlasic, and Radim Semek. Goalie protected Martin Jones, just because you have to protect somebody, and he's kind of the guy there right now, I guess. So, which left Brent Burns exposed. I kind of looked at it again through a cap lens. I just think, like, he doesn't have a no movement clause, right? So Erik Karlsson and Edward or Vlasic both have no movement clauses, so you got to protect them. And, you know, Simic was kind of the other guy that they've got signed through till 2024. So protect him and you expose Burns, and he's got an $8 million cap hit that goes until 2025. So for the next 4 years, I mean, you're clearing off a lot of cap space. And I think Seattle gets a guy that, you know, throughout the past 5 years has been one of the best, or if not the best, offensive defenseman in the NHL. He consistently puts up 300 shots on goal a season. He puts up 30 plus goals. He can do all those things. I know the past year or two has not been so good, but the whole team has not been very good. And I think you send, like, Brent Burns would immediately become the best defenseman for the Seattle Kraken for the upcoming season. So that's my take on it, guys. What'd you think?
I went 7-3-1 as well. So I protected Couture, Kane, Timo Meier, Hertl, LeBanc, Matt Nieto, and it really doesn't matter who you pick any. I had Jonathan Dahlin mostly because of his age. For defense, I protected Karlsson, Burns, and Vlasic. Goalie Jones, obviously. But my pick for Seattle was Ryan Donato. So he's kind of a bit of a he's traveled a bit from he found from Boston to Minnesota, from Minnesota to San Jose. He's shown that he can play, but he hasn't he didn't find his spot too much in San Jose either. So at the end of the season, he was kind of playing on the fourth line, but he has shown that he has offensive upside. So and from what's left for talent, once you go through the protected, there isn't a I don't think there's really much there, so that's why I think they went with Donato. Well, they'll go with Donato.
John?
I differed a little bit from you guys there. Other than my Seattle pick there, I went with Ryan Donato, same as Bruce there. This is the team I had the hardest time with, only because after I protected... Sorry, I went 7-3-1. Only after I protected Couture, Kane, Meier, and Hertl, I really didn't have a clue on who else I would protect on that team. I couldn't make a decision, and I pretty much couldn't pick anybody after that. It would have been just throwing names in there for fun. For for defensemen, Carlson, I put Brent Burns and Vlasic in there. But for goalie protection, I kind of changed it up a little bit. I went with Joseph Coronar, only because Martin Jones, he's over $5 million a season, and he has been absolute trash the last 3 years. I know the team in front of him is not great, but the guy's put up below 900 save percentage for 3 years in a row, and that's just not good enough for a starting tendy. So,
yeah, fair enough. Well, that begs the question, though, is Seattle going to snag him up? I don't know. If you'd love to see that go as a salary dump and just move on from his contract, right? Because he signed through till 2024.
Yeah.
So that was a little bit my approach with Burns, though, too. Like, I feel like Seattle would be very, very tempted to snap up Burns.
Yeah.
Even at $8 million. Like, and again, for 4 more years. But that's a guy that I've heard lots of good things about him just as a person. Like, people like him in the dressing room. He can play on the ice, obviously. I think that'd be a good pickup for them. And then for San Jose, you start thinking about, what can we do with $8 million in our cap? Mm-hmm. You can go out and sign a pretty damn good defenseman, and then, you know, maybe a middle six forward at that price. Like, I don't know, just my thoughts, but
yeah,
fair enough. Martin Jones has not, like, if in redraft leagues, just stay away, just stay as far away from Martin Jones as you possibly can. Yep. Now, don't even spot start the guy. Like, he's been that bad. You've got to be in a real pinch, and he has to be on a heater for you to even think about starting Martin Jones.
Yeah. Yeah, I think ever since he came to San Jose, he's just struggled a little bit.
Yeah, I think he had one good year when they went to the playoffs in 17 against the Oilers.
Yeah, something like that.
But after that, no, he has not been good for sure. Okay, so this is our last team of the night here, guys. Unless you have anything else you want to talk about San Jose, but no, okay. St. Louis. So I went 7-3-1. I've got Ryan O'Reilly, Vladimir Tarasenko, Braden Schenn, David Perron, Oscar Sundquist, Robert Thomas, and Jordan Kyrou. At defense, Torrey Krug, Justin Falk, Colton Parayko, and then Jordan Binnington in goal. Ultimately, I went with Vince Dunn, and I think, yeah, we all went with Vince Dunn on this pick here, right? So he's an excellent puck mover. He can play difficult minutes in the top four. He's got upside as well. He had 102 points. He was plus 22 in 267 games played so far in St. Louis. So he's a good young defenseman. He looked really good last year. Again, a good solid pick for Seattle. Their top four is going to look pretty good, I think, there. What did you guys think? Any differences in terms of guys protected? I don't know if I saw any differences. Okay.
Yeah, mine was the same as yours as well.
No, mine was exactly the same.
I just think, again, that Vince Dunn's the odd man out. It'd be nice to... I think that St. Louis would like to protect him, but they just won't be able to. So, like I say again, I just think he's the odd man out, and I think Seattle will pounce on that.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think, like, Justin Falk before this past season might have been the odd man out there. Like,
right?
He played really well this year, but he's at $6.5 million, and he signed until 2027. So,
yeah,
if not for his performance this past season, they might have exposed him. Kept Krug, Parayko, and Vince Dunn.
Yeah.
But funny, things change pretty quick over the course of a season, right?
Very much so.
Okay. Well, guys, that is the Honda West Division. Anything else you guys want to add to it? Anything else you're hearing in the news this week that I may have forgotten that we touch on before we sign off?
Not that I know of. I was just going through my Twitter lately, and I haven't really seen anything out here that shocks me. So.
Nope.
Okay. All right. Yeah, no, well, sorry, Bruce.
No, I said same as John. I said I haven't heard anything. So,
fair enough. Okay. Well, then, with that, guys, we are going to sign off for the week. Please follow us on Twitter at FH Hacks, on Instagram at Fantasy Hockey Hacks. Visit our website, fantasyhockeyhacks.com. If you have any questions or suggestions for upcoming episodes, please feel free to email us at fantasyhockeyhacks hockeyfeedback@gmail.com. We love to listen and interact with our listeners whenever we can. So please do feel free to get in touch with us. And with that, we'll get in touch with you guys, or we'll talk to you next week. I'm not sure, guys, where are we going next week? Are we going, which division are we going to go with here next week? Got to figure that out here. Mm-hmm. So we've done north and west. Are we going to go central or east? What do you guys want to do?
Let's do central next.
Central.
Central? Okay. So there you go. There you have it. So next week we will cover the Central Division, and we look forward to doing that. So thank you everybody for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Bruce, John, thanks a lot, guys. We'll talk to you next week.
Good night.
All right. Take care, everybody.